Elias was born in Aleppo, Syria in 1960. When she was seven, her family fled the political conflict and moved to Detroit. Bullied in school and caught between a traditional family and tough American classmates, she rebelled. Raya moved to New York City to become a musician and kept herself afloat by cutting hair. At the height of the punk movement, life on the Lower East Side was full of adventure, creative inspiration, and temptation. Raya's occasional drug use turned to addiction. Harley Loco is the nickname given to her in jail, and it's the title of her memoir that some reviewers describe as a rock and roll autobiography. Joining us for the interview was Raya's mentor, Elizabeth Gilbert. Elizabeth Gilbert was born in Connecticut in 1969 and grew up on her family's small Christmas tree farm. She attended NYU, studied poli-sci by day, and worked on short stories by night. After college, she spent some years traveling around the country, working in bars, diners, and ranches, collecting experience to transform into fiction. Returning to New York, she worked as a journalist for Spin, GQ, and the New York Times Magazine. She was a three-time finalist for the National Magazine Award, and a GQ article she wrote about bartending on the Lower East Side became the basis for the movie Coyote Ugly. Of course, Elizabeth is best known for her memoir, Eat, Pray, Love, which sold over 10 million copies and was made into a film starring Julia Roberts. The book became so popular that Time magazine named Elizabeth as one of the 100 most influential people in the world. In 2010, Elizabeth published Committed, a memoir exploring her ambivalence about the institution of marriage. The book immediately became a bestseller, and we'll listen to a sampling today. Her latest novel, The Signature of All Things, a sprawling tale of 19th century botanical exploration, will be published in 2013. So I'm here with Raya and Elizabeth, and I want to say welcome to you both, and thank you so much for stopping by the book report. The obvious question is, how did you meet, the two of you?
I'll take that. We met about 13 years ago in New York through a mutual friend. Raya was doing hair out of her apartment in the East Village, and my friend had just really gotten sick of looking at my Art Garfunkel hair, as she used to describe it. And she said, dude, you have to seriously take care of that. And so she sent me to Raya, and never could I have imagined that I would meet somebody who would become so important in my life there. And over the years and over the haircuts, we just got closer and closer and closer. And, you know, normally people sit in the hairdresser's chair and it's kind of a confessional booth and you share stories of your own life. But I quickly learned that it was better to listen to her stories because they were more interesting than mine. And I became so fascinated by her strange, twisted, unusual darkness into light tale that I just encouraged her to write a book, and that's been the journey she's been on the last few years, and that's how Harley Loco was born.
All right, and may I say, you have great hair.
Well, guess who did it? Guess who did the color? Guess who did the cut? Guess who just touched it up before we arrived? Come on a normal day and see what you get.
All right.
I still can rock a little Art Garfunkel at times.
Raya, you've been described as a self-professed art rocker, ex-junkie, glamour butch lesbian, but how would you like to be introduced to people opening Harley Loco to page one?
Glamour butch, art rocker, punk rock, lesbian, survivor, who is so grateful for every moment that she has. Every moment I wake up, I'm like elated.
Your book subhead is a memoir of hard living, hair, and post-punk rock from the Middle East to the Lower East Side. What have reactions been from non-East Coast readers, like people in Omaha, for example?
I've had great, great, great. You know, that's the subtitle to it, but the content and the message is so universal. I've had middle-aged women write to me and really connect with the bullying aspect or the food, you know, the eating, the addictive sort of aspect, the family, the moving. I mean, there's been so many connections on so many different levels that, you know, for me, it's really, it's shocking because I'm like, how did a a middle-aged housewife in Massachusetts or in Wisconsin or whatever connect with this, but I think that there's a message in there, and the message is hope. And that's what I think people are connecting with. It's like, doesn't matter how many times you get knocked down. You know, what matters is that you get up.
And I think also, I mean, your grandparents had to move from Turkey to Syria, and then your whole family with you at a young age had to move from Syria to Detroit. I think there's so much to connect with at that experience.
There's an inability to sort of feel stable at any given moment. So I'm constantly on the go. And, you know, I juggle many different hats, and I really feel like that's part of my heritage. You know, like, we never felt safe. They never felt safe in Turkey. We didn't feel safe in Syria. Royal Oak, then Warren. And then for me, I didn't really feel safe or content in Detroit, and I had to move to New York. And then we all know what happened in New York. So,
right. I wanted to ask you, you mentioned your home. Your descriptions of some of the apartments that you lived in New York were so grim. Did your family ever visit you in any of them?
They tried. I normally wouldn't let them. There was one time that I do remember, my mother and my sister came up to my Chelsea apartment, and it, you know, the look on their face when they walked in, like, for us, it was just, it's normal. I mean, to live in a little squalor, you know, especially when you had the lifestyle that I had. But the look on my mother's face and my sister's when they walked in and they were staying at the Ritz was just like, you know, and they were like, do our hair. And I was like, I'll bring my kit up to your place, because I don't think this is really, you know, up to your standards. So, yeah. They didn't visit very often.
All right. You've been a musician, artist, hairstylist. What made you pick up the pen to write this story?
This one here, Elizabeth Gilbert, she didn't make me, but she encourage me. She, you know, she just said to me, like, look, these stories are worthy of putting down. And I was like, a book? I can't write a book. Like, I write lyrics, I can write a short script, I can, but a book just seemed like such a huge, huge task that there was no way that I thought I could start it and finish it. And what does it take to be a writer? And she said, honey, you just have to sit down and write. And I'm like, really? Like, what a revelation, you know, because I just thought that it took all of this backstory, all of this, like, education or knowing. And what it took was a lot, don't get me wrong, but it just took the experience and the consistency to just sit and almost be dared to do it, because you don't want to dare me to do anything, you know? And it wasn't a dare, but she was just so encouraging. It was like, she's amazing and she believes in me. Maybe I can believe in myself, and I don't want to let her down because she believes in me. 2 weeks after she said, move into the church house and write, I remember writing her an email, and I was like, you know, why me? Like, I've never had anybody pick me, you know? And, you know, what she wrote back was just this amazing, like, I see you and I see who you are. And so through her eyes, I was able to start seeing myself.
When you started writing, did you have a writing mentor as wonderful as you?
You know, I had a different trajectory as a writer than Rhea. You know, I've only ever had one path from consciousness on, which was to be a writer of stories and books and novels and whatever, like, words are us, whatever needs to be written, I'm on hand to write it. And, you know, probably my biggest writing mentor was my older sister. I grew up in a farmhouse in the country with no neighbors and no TV. And I had this Scheherazade of an older sister who invented these worlds for us. And we lived in our imaginations. And she was very disciplined as a child as well. well. And she wrote plays for us to act out. And she, you know, and it was all very, very imaginative and specific stuff. Like, it wasn't just that we were time-traveling cave kids. We were time-traveling cave kids who had polio. You know, like, there was always, like, these really weird specific details. And so I kind of grew up under her imagination, and it was just second nature for me to write my own plays, write my own stories, and that's all I've ever done ever since.
After Eat, Pray, Love, what kind of pressure was there on you to write the next book?
It was a tricky moment. That's how I always describe it. It wasn't, I'm really stubborn about not ever letting anything that happens in my writing life become any kind of a tragedy. I'm really adamant about that. I have a sort of lifetime crusade against German romanticist ideas about tortured artists. I really believe that it's a beautiful life to have chosen, and it's an interesting life to have chosen, and that part of the deal with it is that you roll as gracefully as you can with whatever occurs. And so I felt like the Eat, Pray, Love tsunami was something to be, to try to ride as carefully as I could without letting it jar me too much. And then to the really important part was to just keep being a writer afterwards and, you know, recognize that whatever happens to your work after you put it out in the world is none of your business. I tell that to Rhea all the time. You know, you're only responsible for the product. You're not responsible for the response. And everyone is invited to read my books. It's unlikely that 10 million people will ever do it again. I recognize that, you know, and yet I know my calling, so I kind of just put my head down and keep doing it.
All right. Speaking about your next book, the topic is really, really fascinating. How did you get involved? The title is?
The Signature of All Things.
All right. And it's about?
It's about botany.
Okay.
It's a novel. It's my first novel in a dozen years. I got my start as a fiction writer. It's really funny. It's very cute for me when people come up and they say to me about Eat, Pray, Love, I really loved your first book. And I think you don't mean my small obscure collection of literary short fiction called Pilgrims. I think you're pretty sure what you mean by my first book, but I had books before that, and they were fiction, and I'm going back to that now. So it's a big, giant historic epic. Takes place from 1780 to 1880, and it follows the fortunes of a family of botanical explorers across the world. And it was great adventure to research it and to write it.
Now, you grew up on a Christmas tree farm. Is that kind of where this book might have started from?
My people are people of the dirt. There's no question about it. You know, they're really like wholesome people. They're all planters and growers and gardeners and farmers. And I heartily rejected that as a kid and tried very hard to stay as far away from it as I could, and went to New York City as fast as I could get myself there, and now live in a small town exactly like the one my parents lived in, with a giant garden and a desire to get goats and chickens. So I'm sort of coming back to the fold. But yeah, I when I settled down and got my own garden, I realized it was the only thing I was interested in, and that's what led me to want to write about botany.
Huh. And when will that be out?
October 1st, 2013.
I hope you'll come back on the book report to talk about it.
I would love to. Thank you, Elaine.
Rhea, one review of your book likened it to George Orwell's Down and Out in Paris and London. Wow, what did you think of that?
Well, I mean, to be put in the same sentence as that just, you know, spun me.
What do you think of New York's evolution from when you landed there?
I have had really mixed feelings about it. It has grown and it has evolved with me. When I was down in the dumps, it felt like New York was also sort of in a place of disarray like that. And as sort of I've gotten better and, you know, gone back there to sort of be in the belly of the beast, to get well with the city, I'm really grateful at the things that are happening. I'm grateful that it's cleaned up. I'm grateful that, you know, there's not blown out cars and blown out buildings everywhere. Like, I'm really, yeah, just bring back the junkies and the homeless, because I want, you know, I want my rent to be low. Then I bought an apartment and I was like, wait a minute, I don't want that guy on my stoop.
You know, so, I mean, as we grow up, it's, you know, I have a problem with certain parts of gentrification and pushing out the old, the old families. Because I've seen kids grow up in my neighborhood, you know, which are now in their late 20s, you know, when their mothers were toting them around as babies. And their grandparents have been pushed out because they can't afford to live there. And they've turned, some of them have turned into drug dealers, so they can't afford to live there. So I have really mixed feelings. And yet, I think there's a place for everyone in New York. I mean, if everyone that wanted me out, if I left when everyone who looked at me and thought I was the homeless junkie that needed to be thrown out of there, then I wouldn't be there either. So when I look at the yuppies or I look at the, you know, whoever it is, I think there's a place for everybody in New York. And I love it. I can't imagine not having, it's in my blood, you know, I can't imagine not living there.
Well, we've heard about another new project. What about yours? After this book tour, what's next for you?
Well, I think I'm going to record a, I think I'm going to do a video of one of my songs. I'm working on some excerpts, short stories that I'm really, really excited, you know, to do. And I really want to start a podcast called Chicks, Football, Music, and Sex. Because I love football, and there's no girls doing, like, coverage of football. I just think it'd be so much fun.
Well, thank you both so much for joining me today. Your book was wonderful. It was really, reading it was like sitting here and talking to you. I want to congratulate you.
Thanks so much.
And it's certainly an honor to meet you. Thank you so much,
thank
Elizabeth.
You for having us on.
All right. Yeah. Bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks.